Larry Day joins the program now. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you very much.
Larry, we're talking because you have a piece in the current Valley Visual Arts Show. I wonder if you'd describe it for us.
It's a watercolor done on location, or as Winslow Homer would say, sketched from nature, of the Crystal River between here and Marble on the way. So it was late at night, not late at night, but late in the afternoon. The light was fading. And so it struck my eye. I just pulled over to the side of the road and went down the bank and set up my work and just painted away.
So you painted in plain air, just
right
on the spot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that the way you always
do?
You,
yeah, that's 98% of what I do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And do you always work in watercolor?
Yes.
Uh-huh. No oils,
yeah.
Pastel?
I started in oil. And basically my palette that I use is based off of an oil painting palette, which was kind of unorthodox. I didn't realize it at the time, but...
What does that mean? Explain that for me.
Well, it's got the same palette that I use when I studied oil painting under this guy named Gerald Merfeld in Illinois, which is where I'm from originally. So I didn't realize until after I started looking at the palette that I started looking at the other palettes of other artists in water who do watercolor. A lot of watercolor, like Winslow Homer, I saw his palette. I saw John Singer Sargent's palette, and I realized, hey, these are different colors, and there's some different colors in here than I was using in the oil painting. So I just kind of improvised from then on, like tailored my own palette for what I wanted to use.
I picture watercolor palettes as somewhat more muted than oil palettes. Is that a fair statement?
You mean the actual colors themselves?
Yeah. Pastel-y.
No, they're pretty bright.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not, I don't use super bright colors. They're just, burnt sienna is a burnt sienna. It's not like, if that makes any sense.
So you're not employing the Van Gogh palette. Very bright. Or can be, anyway. Very vivid, anyway. Maybe bright's not the word.
Yeah, I don't really know about that. That's a good question. I never thought about that. They're not somber colors, and they're not super, super gaudy colors. They're pretty much the same, probably pretty much the same kind of colors he used, I'm guessing. It's just that he used like straight pigment a lot of the times. Where you're working with the watercolor medium, you're working with water, so it's already diluted. It's not fresh right out of the tube. Although sometimes I squirt, if I need it, I'll just put direct color right on the piece.
Hmm. Well, you're also a storyboard artist as well as an illustrator for books, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But is there a difference between painting fine art and storyboard and book illustration?
I try to keep it as similar as possible. The only difference is... One, in painting watercolors, I'm outside, and I start with just a light pencil line for indication, which may or may not be erased later, and then I just throw the color on. I know that sounds easy, but I've been doing it for so long, it's like a natural thing for me. On storyboard work, I basically do the same thing. The only thing I do differently with storyboard work is after the pencil, I go over it with some ink, an ink line, to define everything carefully. And then I throw watercolor on it. So as storyboard art goes, I'm unorthodox there because 99% of storyboard artists are doing things digitally. So that's very unusual.
So you're not doing it digitally?
No.
Oh.
All I know is how to do digitally is to plug the computer in and scan.
Okay.
And adjust it a little and then send it.
So that's a conscious choice on your part.
That's a very conscious choice, yes.
And why is that?
Well, I think it's because, I like to work from head to hand to paper. There's something very kind of nutritious about that in a way. I don't like to work from head to keyboard because I think you miss something very, you miss a connection there. At least I do anyway. And all the a lot of the times I'm repairing stuff also, like with storyboard work or picture book work, I go into the original and I can repair it if I make a mistake, which I always make mistakes. And I'm always repairing it right on the paper itself, which adds another dimension to it that I can't get, that I've never seen quite from someone else. So yeah, you know, when I'm doing watercolors outside, it's there and it's done. If it's not done, then there's always another side to the watercolor paper.
So you don't come back to the watercolor study later to buff it up or add something?
No.
Or subtract? Can't you erase watercolor?
You can't really erase it, but you can use some opaque and fix it, you know, or change it. You know, I rarely change anything I've done on plein air. I think when I'm painting plein air, that's what I'm seeing in front of me, and that's what I'm carrying away from it. And so if that's good enough, then that's good enough. If it's not, then I'll do it again.
Have you always been painting the fine art aspect of things, or is that sort of a recent thing that you're doing?
No, I've always...
Have you?
Yeah, that's the first thing I've always... Oh. Yeah, since a kid.
Oh,
I
really?
Was doing fine art. I didn't realize it was fine art. I was just drawing. Uh-huh. But then later I realized, oh, hey, I guess I was doing fine art. That's kind of interesting.
So nobody ever came to you and said, that's fine.
No. Yeah, right. I was also like studying... I was also studying, when I got to study with this guy, Gerald Merfeld, he started introducing me to illustrators. I'd never really looked at illustrators outside of, like, I don't know, from the encyclopedia, the World Book Encyclopedia of, like, illustrators. But once I started understanding illustration, I saw what he was showing me was that there really wasn't that much difference between illustration and fine art, the ones I really liked anyway, you know, the ones that didn't separate the two that much, you know, the combined illustration and fine art, those were the people that I really liked.
So there's no sense that failed painters become illustrators?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Right.
That's interesting. Huh. On your website, you talk about... A very important part of a picture book is to carry the emotional connection throughout the story with the pictures. I wonder if you talk about that, because that strikes me as probably being pretty key.
Well, yeah, it is key, and there's a visual narrative. And the visual narrative has got to complement the words. Or if there aren't any words, like in the recent book I have out called Found, the visual narrative has to carry the story. So you got to understand where the clarity is, where you need clarity. You have to understand what's the most important part of this book, who's the protagonist, and you have to be able to make that protagonist as consistent as possible throughout the book, and you have to also know, composition-wise, where to place things. So as a visual artist, you have to think, okay, what do I want the reader to see first? What do I want the reader to see second, third? And what's the most important thing I'm saying here? And what's the emotional connection that connects the whole thing together? You know, and when you do a picture book, you have to think about the page turn. So when you have to, it's good to have something on the end of the right side of the page, because we go from left to right, that's going to make you want to turn the page.
Oh, interesting.
And once you turn the page, you have to give the reader what you know, you have to give them the meat of the reason for turning the page. So yeah, it's very important. A visual narrative is like text. Uh-huh. You know, it's like you're writing. You're writing emotions, but you're drawing emotions. You're not writing them. So it has to almost give you something besides what's in the text. You know, it has to upgrade the text, so to speak.
Interesting. Well, you mentioned composition as a facet of that emotional content. Are there others?
As far as...
Well, I mean, how do you portray an emotion? How do you convey an emotion? Through the line, through the color, through all the above, none of the above?
All of the above are really crucial. The most crucial thing for telling visual emotional, a visual emotional narrative is body language. And I have a mantra that when in doubt, leave the expression out. So what happens is when I leave the expression out and I show the body language supporting it, then the reader fills in the emotion. It's a better connection for your imagination to fill in what's not there. So I don't know if I'm explaining that very well, but...
You are very well. And, you know, it's funny because emotion is subconscious,
it
I
is.
Would say.
It is
and
very,
so
yeah.
That's kind of what you're talking about.
Right, exactly. And but there's a lot of unspokenness. You know, you don't have to beat somebody over the head visually, like with a over-exaggerated expression. You don't have to use any kind of hyperbole, any kind of over-the-top expression, because the reader fills, you want the reader to fill that in for themselves.
You're working with an author always on this
always.
Project.
Yeah.
Do one of you have veto power over the other, or is it always a collaboration? How does that part work?
It's always a collaboration. You know, when I worked in the, I still work in the advertising business, you have to work with people. You have to collaborate. You have no choice. So I learned to collaborate from the ad world, working with creatives and copywriters. So you sit down and you work stuff out, and then it's a trial and error. You go back and you change things. And with a picture book, it's always one of the things I do is lay it out on one page, actually. So the frames themselves are like tiny, and they're all on one big page. And that way I can see the overview of the whole thing. And one thing that my wife Miriam and I work on, so we've done two books together. We've got a third one we're working on now. We lay it out. We do thumbnail sketches. And well, I do the thumbnail sketches, but we lay it out on the counter and just leave it there. It's like putting storyboards up on a bulletin board. And then as you go through the course of the day, you like see things that you hadn't seen before. So you're always revising up until the end.
This might be a chicken and egg question, but the text always comes first?
Yes. Yes. Now I have to tell you that sometimes a character will come first. So I may have a drawing of a character. One of the books that my wife and I did was called Raising the Littlest Cow. R-A-I-S-I-N. Raising, but raisin.
Okay.
And raisin is because the word is because it's a very small cow.
Oh, okay.
Okay? So I forgot what I was getting at there. Do you remember?
Text first?
Yeah, right. So that was a character first. And then Miriam took that and wrote a story.
Okay.
So, but the text is always the first thing. It's always like, that's what is the most important thing. And that's true in advertising too.
Interesting. So you're reacting to the text. Does the text writer often change the text based
yes.
on what you've produced?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, I had a book. I have a book coming out soon called Bim Bam Bop and Una. It's about three racing ducks and a Roan Clare duck, which is a small domestic duck, short and stocky, and the racing ducks are tall and thin. But yeah, it's with Jackie Briggs Martin. She's the author, and Jackie changed copy when she saw the art. Because the art wasn't there before, but now the art's there and it fills in where the text was, where she was talking about things, she realized that she could eliminate some of the text because it was in the visuals.
Oh, I see. Huh. So if you're not working in the same room together, you're trading emails back and forth?
Yes. Yeah.
Is the way you work?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right.
Huh. You know, there's a huge market for children's books in this country.
There is.
And you've tapped into it. Apparently, I think I saw, what, 20 books that you've been a part of?
20 or some plus, yeah.
Some of them nonfiction, some of them fiction. Is there,
right.
is there a difference for between drawing for a nonfiction book as opposed to a fiction book?
Well, for me in particular, I've put a lot more research and time into a nonfiction, which can be good or bad.
Is that because you want to be historically accurate?
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Factual?
Oh, yeah. 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 I want to be true to the.
Yeah.
To, yeah. Yeah. In fiction, I can pull back, and so I don't have so much research. A lot of times in fiction, I pull stuff out of my head from memory, from drawings for so many years, and oftentimes, that's better. I have better results from that visually than if I do too much research, if I do research, because then I'm just kind of belaboring something. You know, it's fresher when it's better when it's fresher, mm-hmm. you know, the drawings. In fiction, I can go there sooner than I can with nonfiction.
How did you get involved in children's illustration? How did that happen for you?
Well, it was just something I decided I wanted to try. And so I reached out to agents, and I found an agent who started getting me work, and I just started from there. I think that might have been mid-90s, I think. Yeah.
Well, we mentioned it's a huge market. Is that partly why you're involved? Because I'm not suggesting that you're doing it just because of the money, but what am I trying to say here? Good question.
Well, I think as a children's book author, artist, you're not really in it for the money.
Really?
No.
It's for the love.
It's really, it may become part of it if you become successful. But I wouldn't say so. I wouldn't say it's for the money.
Okay.
You know, so.
So that's not the reason why you're doing it.
No,
an outcome.
It was just another, you know what? It was just another thing to draw. It was another avenue of drawing for me. Besides, I was doing storyboard work so much, and I thought, well, I want to try something else. And that's pretty much why. Yeah.
Storyboards, when I think of storyboards, I think of Pixar animation movies where they've got pictures on the wall. Is that what a storyboard is?
That's what a storyboard is. But yeah, I do storyboards for commercials.
Oh, I see.
Allstate, Disney, things like clients like that. Uh-huh. Yeah. So with a movie, it's going to be like epic. It's going to be a ton of storyboard frames.
Yeah.
But with a commercial, it can be anywhere from, I don't know, 10, one keyframe up to 12. I just did a Samsung spot that had 44 storyboard frames, full color. So that was unusual.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow. How long does it take to produce 44 storyboards?
As much time as they say you're going to have.
Which is like it could be a day.
It could be a day. It could be a week.
Yikes.
It could be like right now I'm working on some Disney that's going to be due tomorrow and today. I don't even have it yet. So,
huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is a kind of a good thing to, it's really murderous, the deadlines, but it's also a good training. It's also been good training for me to really focus on something and get it done.
Hmm. Interesting. What is your daily art practice look like? Do you have a studio? Do you work in it every day, 8 hours a day, or is it entirely dependent on the deadline?
I wander around a lot. It's not really nailed down since I'm freelancing, so it's not like I go to an office like I used to. But yeah, even when I was in an office in Chicago, I would wander around too until, you know, I think it's hard to discipline myself, but once I get started on something, I usually don't get up. Yeah.
So it's the kind of thing where you look up and the day is gone?
Right, yeah. The whole week and the whole year is gone.
Oh,
yeah,
how about right. that? Huh. Well, you're obviously not in Chicago anymore.
I'm not in Chicago.
Are you living here in the Valley?
We are in both.
I see.
In the Valley and in Chicago.
So do you find a certain measure of freedom here that you in your artwork that maybe you didn't have before because you're here?
I think because... that's a good question. I haven't thought of it in those terms. I don't really think so. I think wherever I go, I adapt to whatever's there. I certainly enjoy painting the landscapes here. They're just you can just stand in one spot, paint, and turn to the right, and you can paint another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Chicago, you can do it too. It's just a little. You just have to be a little careful where you are, what neighborhood you're in, but. Chicago is very exciting. It's a very vibrant city. I love Chicago.
Yeah, I've always had fun there. Well, in your fine art practice, in your watercolor paintings, are you painting whenever you get a bug up your butt, or do you do it every day? What's your practice there as far as watercolor painting?
I should be doing it every day, but I don't. Uh-huh. Sometimes I'm interrupted with storyboards or picture book work.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, you know, when I paint plein air, I usually do 2 to 5 paintings.
At a time?
Yeah.
Oh. So you work fast.
I work very fast.
Huh. You have to, don't you, with watercolors, pretty much?
Well, not necessarily, but I do. Uh-huh. You know, everybody's different. But usually, yeah, you work pretty quickly. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, and one thing I do is I've got a portable easel. And when I've noticed that when I set my portable easel up and I set everything up, I end up kind of overworking pieces because I spend too much time on them. But when I have a board that I hold in my arm and I hold my little watercolor block palette in my left hand and I put a can of water on the ground, and so I'm dipping down there with my brush, I tend to work much quicker.
Hmm.
I work more rapidly that way than, yeah. So, yeah, it's I can spend like, oh, I would say 40 minutes on a painting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And are you always satisfied with the end result, or
no.
Do you throw a lot of them away?
No, I have some that I think, wow, this is what I said. I'm glad there's another side to the watercolor paper.
Oh, wow. So you can paint on both sides of watercolor paper.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that depends on how much water you apply, no?
Depends more on the thickness of the paper.
Uh-huh.
Like if you're working with a really thin paper, like a 90 pound is really thin.
Uh-huh.
It's going to wrinkle more than a 150 or 300 pound paper.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Huh. You ever think about making your own paper?
No.
No. Is that pretty involved?
It's very involved.
Huh.
I usually work on handmade watercolor paper. It's made out of Brookston, Indiana, called Twin Rocker. And this paper has like an eggshell white. It's made out of cotton. It's not machine made, it's handmade. So the texture of it has a random texture compared to like an Arches paper, which is great paper too, which I use, but it has a machine surface. It's not surface, but a machine pattern to it, made by a machine. So it's uniform. So I think the Twin Rocker, one reason I like it is because it gives you that random pattern. That I really like.
Hmm. Is this your first Valley Visual Art Show?
No, actually, I was in 2 years ago.
Oh, you were.
Yeah.
What's your impression of that? It's a real tradition in this area.
It is. It just like filled up in like 10 seconds.
I heard that this year.
Yeah. So that was. I felt lucky to get in because I had everything ready,
uh-huh.
You know, to go because I heard that it was like going to fill up quickly. So. 2 years ago, I think I waited for a while before I entered and I got in. Last year, I waited too long and didn't get in. So this year, I was ready. Mm-hmm. But it's a nice show. You know, it's so well curated. It's so well lit. And it's two small rooms, but it feels expansive when you go in these rooms. It's just really, it's a really nice place.